She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. Thank you for being here today. This is indeed Mrs. Green. And remember, in our world, we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And think about that, because I can guarantee you that our guest today, Sasha Lutzi, who is from the National Resources Defense Council, she's a political analyst there, will give us a great deal to think about. And if you're listening to my show, that's what you're looking for. So we're definitely going to give it to you. Our sponsor today is Goodwill Industries of Southern Arizona, and their business is changing lives. And I always like to add my personal commentary on agencies that partner with me. They really are doing wonderful work all over the country, providing services to at-risk populations. And the way that you can support them, one of the funnest ways or the most fun ways, is by shopping at one of their retail stores. And I had an experience this week where I actually purchased a very beautiful, very flattering dress there for $6.99 and wore it to one of my business groups and stood up and announced that. So I do it with great pride. Goodwill is a proud partner of ours. I have many stories from girlfriends. So check out their retail stores and know that when you buy things there, your money goes to support wonderful programs that help make all of our world a better place. So as I said, today we'll be talking with Sasha Lutzi, a political analyst from National Resources Defense Council. The topic could not be more timely because she knows a lot about antibiotics in animals, in our food supply. We're going to talk a little bit about Meatless Mondays. And then if we have time, we're going to throw in some fun conversation about Frugal Feast. I was not aware of it. I went down the Google rabbit hole. So I really hope we will fit that in because that's really good news. Sasha, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks so much. Really happy to be with you.
And I just have one more quick announcement. Please remember to join me every Saturday live at noon, Arizona time, at MrsGreensWorld.com. Remind you also that you can listen on your iPhone or Droid. We have instructions for how to do that on my website. All of the podcasts from every show are also on the website to download. And stay connected with me on Facebook, Twitter, or Pinterest. If you have questions, email me info@MrsGreensWorld. And I'm also now a part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network. Our show is aired there on Mondays and Tuesdays. You can access them and get the schedule for Mrs. Green's World by visiting dreamvisionsradio.com. And one more short announcement about another sponsor. Supporting the mission and vision of Mrs. Green's World, and I talk about EcoBella, and it's so relevant for today's show because some of the things we're going to talk about are cruelty-free organic, and that's what EcoBella stands for. They have cruelty-free organic cosmetics, natural skincare products, and they're literally derived from organics, sourced from organics, fair trade, and they make it possible for me to put things on my skin that are safe. So they're not only committed to my safety, but they're committed to the safety of the planet, and they're dedicated to protecting its animals. I say this a lot. We are a global community. When I put on their anti-aging, anti-blemish skincare, which I happen to need right now, I feel good about it, and I know that no harsh chemicals, no artificial dyes or fragrances are coming into my skin and into my body, and that really matters to me. So please visit them at EcoBella, it's two C's, EcoBella.com. And as I said, as for me, I love their day cream, and I love feeling safe and guilt-free putting it on my skin. Sasha, let's go to you because there is so much to cover. A little bit about your background is always a good way so that the audience and Mrs. Green can get to know you. You have a wonderful background, Paris, New York. I read it, your bio, and I'm like, I want to be Sasha.
That's really nice of you to say. Well, I'll try and keep it brief. I basically went to school for public policy, really wanted to, like you said, I went to school in Europe, but wanted to come back to the United States and work on environmental issues here at home. came to work at the Natural Resources Defense Council, mostly focusing on climate change to start, but as it relates to the agricultural sector specifically. And sort of that interest has transitioned into a broader suite of issues facing the agricultural sector. And now I'm part of a team here at NRDC that is sort of creating a nascent, dedicated program around sustainable food and agriculture and working a lot on issues specific to the livestock sector, which is, you know, it's well documented. It's sort of the most environmentally damaging segment of our agricultural system. So there's a lot of challenges, but a lot of opportunities as well.
And a lot of people waking up. I have to live in that world of hope, possibility, and change. So as I said earlier in the broadcast, it couldn't be more timely, because maybe if Stanford scientists had not issued that report on organic foods being no more nutritious than their conventional counterparts, which is just a headline, we might have talked about other things. But I think it's important, from my view, to talk about how they not only misled us with the report, but they really missed discussing the much, much larger issue of public health. And when you and I briefly spoke off air, we are a global community. So, you know, what happens in Tucson doesn't stay in Tucson. It could happen in Tucson and stay in New Jersey, because we have things like really severe winds. So let's talk about that a little bit. If we can talk about the Stanford scientists report, and feel free to cut some big holes in it.
Sure, sure. So just want to let your viewers know what this report was about. So I think it was last week, Stanford University published a study which was really a meta-analysis, sort of a review of a couple of hundred of other studies. So they reviewed, I think, 237 other studies that had been conducted comparing the nutritional content of conventionally produced foods to organically produced foods. So they looked primarily at the nutrient density differences between the two. The headline, once this report was published, the headlines ended up being quite sensational.
Right.
And basically saying, you know, there's no difference between the, you know, conventionally grown foods are no healthier than organically grown foods, throwing around this term healthier. And, you know, I sort of felt like consumers were left to conclude that they were sort of just wasting their money if they were buying organic foods. So there are a lot of problems with this report. First and foremost, organic agriculture doesn't actually claim to be healthier in the sense of nutrient
ever density. It never says it's more nutritious ever. It says it's healthier. Big difference.
Right. So it kind of depends on how you define healthy, and I'll get to that in a second. But organic is really about how the food is produced. It's about the practices that are used on the land and in processing the food. And so you kind of need to take a step back and think about the word healthy as much more than just, you know, the density of the three, I think, vitamins that they specifically looked at. Two of the main reasons that we support organic here at NRDC is because organic farmers are not allowed to use chemical pesticides, and they're not allowed to use antibiotics in the production of meat and other livestock products. So this is something that the Stanford study addressed, and they actually did find that organic foods had significantly lower amounts of pesticide residues, lower incidences of antibiotic-resistant bacteria on organic meats. But that finding was kind of diminished and almost swept aside by, like I said, these sensationalist headlines. So, you know, if you ask me, you know, I consider it really important for my health to not be exposed to pesticide residues and antibiotic-resistant bacteria. So for me, you know, that's an important quote unquote health finding that's missed.
Do you mind if we elaborate a little bit, because I think the public's understanding of the hurdles or the standards to which organic food producers are held is so different by the USDA and your list. I mean, I can just read it quickly in one of your wonderful blogs about antibiotics without the use of antibiotics, artificial growth hormones, high fructose corn syrup, artificial dyes, which, oh, by the way, are made from coal tar and petrochemicals, artificial sweeteners, synthetically created chemical pesticides and fertilizers, genetically engineered proteins and ingredients. I love this one, Sasha. Thank you so much. Sewage sludge and irradiation. And I was like, really? Okay. So there are other foods that we're eating that are not prohibited from having those factors present in them. I think it's important because you went to the trouble of writing it all down. And I think our viewers are hungry, no pun intended, for good solid information, because the number one reason why people make green choices is their health. I research it constantly. What does it mean to me and my family in terms of my health? So there you go with all of those standards that organic producers have to follow. So let's go on with the antibiotics, which is really, the superbugs, maybe a segue into that.
Sure. And so I just want to say, you just read this list and I felt it was important to put it down on my blog. And I think the take-home message there is that organic is not a gimmick.
Not a gimmick.
this is a list of serious, important things that really get at the heart of how our food is being produced. It's a standard that really does mean something in terms of, I think, the things that your listeners and a lot of Americans really care about in terms of the food that's coming to their dinner plate. So in terms of the antibiotics, this was something that I really did not know anything about before I started working on it along with our team here at NRDC. Some really surprising learnings. I don't know if your viewers know this. I certainly didn't. But today, 80% of all of the antibiotics that are sold in the United States are given to farm animals. They're sold to the livestock sector, not to humans. Only 20% of the antibiotics that are sold actually go to human uses. And the vast majority of those, about 80% of the 80%, are used by livestock producers for two main reasons. The first is what they call growth promotion. So a couple of decades ago, someone discovered that if you feed animals antibiotics, they get fatter faster. So basically, there's an increase in productivity there.
Right.
So they're being fed to these animals to fatten them up as quickly as possible and get them slaughtered and out to market as quickly as possible.
Which is all about money and earnings per
profit.
Share.
Yes. Sure,
profit,
sure.
Profit.
It's often referred to as yield or productivity, but yes, right. There's a dollar, there's dollars and cents there. The second reason is what's referred to as disease prevention. So what's important for your listeners to understand is that these antibiotics are being given to animals that don't actually have an infection, that aren't actually sick, but they're under severe pressure of getting sick because of the conditions under which they're being raised. So these animals are often in very crowded, very dirty and stressed conditions in these livestock operations, and basically it's that they're under so much disease pressure that these antibiotics are basically given to them to help them survive these conditions.
Right. They're actually filthy, disgusting, inhumane conditions. And anybody that's looked at any of the films for Insiders know that you don't ever feel the same about eating a chicken from, Costco again. And I, in fact, don't eat chickens from there anymore. anymore because I look at them and I think, oh, I can't do it. So filth,
well, I think it's, yeah.
Go sorry. Ahead. Filth is such a good word. It's disgusting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it's important to keep in mind it's not about sort of any one producer or retailer. It's really about this industry.
The American
livestock industry has undergone a really radical transformation the last few decades, and I don't think this is something that a lot of Americans are aware of. I think that sometimes when we think about animal agriculture, we have kind of a pastoral image of, you know, animals out on the land grazing on pasture. And that used to be how most animals were raised in this country. You know, it was sort of dispersed, and they were out, feeding on pasture, on grass. Over the last few decades, what we've seen is, you know, rapid and powerful consolidation of this industry, so that now, you know, just a handful of companies really control the vast majority of the meat that's coming to our restaurants and our stores. And they also control these large, what are known as confined animal feeding operations, or CAFOs. They're basically these giant factory farms. So the animals have really been taken off of the land and put into these factories, and they're kind of being produced like, you know, like widgets in any other industry
you can
think of.
Like they're a factory part.
Yeah, and the trouble with this system, I think, even putting aside some of the animal welfare concerns, which are absolutely very important, is that, you know, these factory farms really they breed bacteria. There's just so much bacteria there, and it's really this constant what's known as non-therapeutic use of antibiotics, meaning it's being given to these animals regularly in low doses throughout their lifetimes to be able to sort of withstand these conditions. It's really this use of non-therapeutic antibiotics that props up this new industrial system.
And we're talking about chickens, pigs, cows, and other animals that, you know, meat animals, but those are the biggest. Chickens, pigs, and cows, I mean, that's pretty much what people eat. So they are given low doses of antibiotics, which is then creating resistance, and it's the same in the human population. I mean, we have superbugs that are unheard of, diseases that are unheard of, and part of that is because of the over-medication of our population. So it all ties in, and we're eating those meats which have the antibiotics in them. So there is a food chain issue here.
That's right. So I think you're right to sort of make that next connection between the use of these antibiotics in this industry and superbugs. So what we're most concerned about at NRDC is not, giving a sick animal antibiotics when it needs it. That's an appropriate use.
Right.
What we're
right.
most concerned about is this sort of routine low dosing of entire herds or flocks of animals for large stretches of time with antibiotics. It's typically given to them in their feed, in their water, so they're constantly consuming it. And it turns out that this creates kind of a perfect storm for the breeding of antibiotic-resistant bacteria, superbugs, as you call them. And so basically, there's so much bacteria present there that the ones that are resistant to these antibiotics, they actually start breeding. And they don't just stay within these facilities. They actually we're finding escape these facilities in lots of different ways. It can be, you know, on the workers. There's been a lot of studies of the workers in these facilities and how much of this antibiotic-resistant bacteria actually ends up in their system. So the bacteria kind of hitches a ride on the workers, and they take it home to their families, their communities. It also sort of leaves the facilities in water that comes into contact with the waste, on the air. It's been found in dust that's been blowing off of these facilities. And then, really importantly, it's on the meat. So, the meat eventually ends up in the grocery store. And, you know, the government actually goes in and tests fresh meat every year. This is really shocking, but, you know, over half of the meats, I think it's 52% of the fresh, I don't know if it's just chicken or if it was all meat that was tested, I think, in the most recent numbers I looked at, had superbugs.
Okay, let's end with that thought. Superbugs, come back with that thought. We have to take a quick break. We are talking to Sasha Lutzi from NRDC. Please stay here with us.
University of Arizona professor John Pollard asked the students in the Posada San Pedro Hall to consider bringing solar energy to the dorm. Just 3 years later, the Solar Cats, a group of students who took up the cause, have installed 44 solar panels on the dorm, saving 20,000 kilowatt hours of energy and reducing greenhouse gas emissions by 14 metric tons every year. Talk about students with a sunny future. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Hi, I'm Abbott Taylor. With over 35 years creating jewelry in Tucson, no one has more experience in designing and making diamond jewelry in Tucson than Abbott Taylor Jewelers. Please come in and see some of the thousands of designs we have created, or come in and have us design something original just for you. Whether you're looking for a simple and stylish graduation gift, your engagement ring, or a breathtaking jewelry piece to celebrate an important birthday or anniversary, you can't beat our competitive diamond pricing. With 100% trade-up guaranteed, set in an Abbott Taylor jewelry design, always using earth-friendly recycled gold. Abbott Taylor Jewelers, exquisite jewelry designs and exceptional diamond deals created right here in Tucson for over 35 years. Abbott Taylor Jewelers at 6383 East Grant Road, on Facebook and on the web at atdiamonds.com. Diamond designs for everyone. Abbott Taylor Jewelers.
Hi, this is Mrs. Green with some great news about the all-new 2012 VW Passat. It's 2012 Motor Trend Car of the Year, best in class for legroom, and has standard Bluetooth technology. VW thought of everything by giving the Passat a brand new sleek design that conveys confidence and assertiveness. If you're looking for the best ownership experience possible and a great new Passat, visit Chapman Tucson at 4600 East 22nd Street between Columbus and Swan.
You know how they say your donation to Goodwill changes lives?
Well, it's true.
It's true.
Well, it's true.
Goodwill.
Goodwill gave my son a chance.
My mom, hope.
My brother, a sense of purpose.
And help my dad find a job.
Goodwill helps thousands of people.
People like us every year.
People like us.
Every year.
Your donations to Goodwill do change lives. Please donate today.
You can save hundreds on home improvement by checking out Habitat for Humanity's Habastore. The Habastore sells new and gently used home improvement items for pennies on the dollar. You can find cabinets, doors, windows, light fixtures, furniture, and much more. Plus, our inventory is constantly changing. You'll be saving money, and all the profits go to Habitat for Humanity Tucson, helping to build a better community. The Habastore is located at 935 West Grant Road. You can reach us at 520-889-7200 or habitattucson.org.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. And we are certainly giving everyone a great deal to think about with our guest today. I have the distinct pleasure of interviewing Sasha Lutzi, who is a political analyst from the National Resources Defense Council. We are talking about antibiotics in animals and the food supply, something which greatly affects us all because we have that in common. We all eat and we all drink water, and it affects all of this. So, Sasha, thank you so much for being a part of Mrs. Green's World today and sharing your expertise with us. We were talking about superbugs, and because of the constant low-grade antibiotics that the animals are given in their environments, it's creating superbugs, which are diseases, basically viruses and problems that arise because of the resistant strains to the antibiotics. Is that the fair way of putting it?
Yeah, so maybe this is a good opportunity to sort of connect this problem of breeding superbugs to what's happening on the human health side. So antibiotic resistant infections are no joke. These are infections that are much harder for doctors to treat. They lead to much longer illnesses, more hospital stays, and even deaths when treatments fail. And these antibiotic-resistant infections are on the rise. So, just one type of superbug, MRSA, which is basically a methicillin-resistant staph infection, that alone kills 19,000 Americans a year. That's more than HIV/AIDS. So this is not a small problem. And I think, we all remember back in school, learning about the discovery of antibiotics, about penicillin, and, this is arguably one of the most important medical breakthroughs in modern history. And it's really being put at risk right now. And we're really seeing a world where something like, sore throat infection or a urinary tract infection is getting harder and harder and harder to treat when it's coming from these antibiotic-resistant strains of bacteria. So this is a major public health threat. It's costing our society $35 billion. A year, a lot of days spent in hospitals for people that used to be able to just go to their doctor and get a simple antibiotic and go home. Now it's turning into a hospital stay, and doctors are having to use sort of like much more heavy duty antibiotics to treat these infections. And I just want your listeners to know that this isn't just NRDC saying this. It sounds a little bit alarmist maybe, but this is the World Health Organization, the Infectious Diseases Society of America,
the Center for Disease Control, which is huge.
Yeah, the American Medical Association. Yeah. Yeah, these are the sort of the most trusted scientific and medical institutions that we have that are basically raising a four-alarm fire about this and saying this is a big problem, and what's happening in the livestock industry is a major contributor to it, and we need to do something now.
And I think it's really important when you talk about traditional organizations that have the respect of the public. I, of course, have immense respect for what NRDC is saying in my role, but I want to read a sentence from your blog, and I hope everybody gets off the radio show and goes and looks to it. We will give the contact information, but antibiotics are one of the most useful and important medical advances in recent history. Their effectiveness, however, is being compromised by bacterial resistance arising in part from excessive use of antibiotics in animal agriculture. Now, the AMA, there it goes. It's bingo, slam, say it, there it is. So to me, it was really, I believe you, I read a lot. There's so much more research being published about the importance of people taking note. So you're right, it's the Center for Disease Control, many, many, many organizations. Now, let's talk about the difference. I want to talk a little more about the superbugs, but with organic meat producers, they are not allowed to use antibiotics, so they're not contributing to the problem. They are using better feed and cleaner housing. And I know that I've talked with people on my show forever, and they talk about if you create a clean environment and if you feed animals good food, a lot of these problems are eliminated at the source. You don't have to worry about antibiotics. You don't have to worry about pest control, even in the growing. If you have healthy soil, the possibility for something to go wrong is greatly minimized. So want to speak about that a little bit?
Sure. So that's right. And I think at the heart of what you're saying is that it doesn't have to be this way. Antibiotics are not a necessary tool in livestock production, and there are alternatives. Organic is one of them. But basically, at the heart of an alternative model are some really common sense things. When animals are raised in conditions that are cleaner, when they're not crowded, and when they're not stressed, they don't get sick. So they don't need this constant, massive dosing of antibiotics. There are simple common sense practices that livestock producers can use instead of antibiotics. I feel strongly, and it sounds like you feel strongly, that, you know, antibiotics, the fact that antibiotics are being used as a substitute for better management practices is not really acceptable, especially at a time when, you know, our doctors are working really hard to be judicious in their prescription of antibiotics. We hear all the time from, you know, parents and others that, you know, go and try and get an antibiotic prescription, and the doctor is, you know, rightfully hesitant. They want to make sure that other ways of getting well have been exhausted, and that they remain good stewards of this really precious drug. So while our doctors are working hard, on one hand, you have a real double standard where, you know, the livestock industry is just being allowed to use these drugs indiscriminately.
Go ahead.
No, sorry.
Well, one of the things that I think people care about, if you get to them at the heart space, you get people's interest when you talk about pregnant women and children. So a huge non sequitur to me in the discussion of this study is that they omitted the highly toxic, and I learned all this from your blog and from then researching what Phil Pott and Ben Brook wrote, but highly toxic, I think it's organophosphate pesticides, they are so dangerous that they're not allowed, they're illegal to be used in homes or in residential lawns, but agriculture can still use them. To me, that stands out, that screams out inconsistency. Do you not think, I go again to where it rains, the wind blows, on and on. So if it's my lawn that's safe, but the farm across the street isn't, where's the wisdom in that? What's the lobbying? Let's get down to that one, because it affects pregnant women, it affects young children, and everybody seems to care about at least that part of the population.
That's right. So one of the reasons that we're getting such a response to this issue is that, you know, even when people maybe don't consider themselves traditional environmentalists, they still care about the food that's coming into their homes, what they're eating, what they're feeding their families. In the case of antibiotics, it is the responsibility of the Food and Drug Administration to regulate their use in the livestock sector. So that is the government agency that is charged with making sure that when antibiotics are being used in livestock production, it's not harming human health. They themselves, over 30 years ago, determined that there is a major problem here. But for all this time, they've really failed to deal with it. We actually took them to court last summer, and we won. A federal judge ruled that they have to act on their own findings, that they determined that this indiscriminate use of antibiotics in the livestock industry for growth promotion and for disease prevention was causing a major public health threat, and the judge ordered them to take action. They're now appealing that ruling, and we're gonna be working hard to hold their feet to the fire. But you know, something that your listeners can do right away is go on our website. It's nrdc.org/food, and there they'll find a link to our page all about antibiotics in the livestock sector, and there's ways to take action there where they can tell FDA that they want, you know, they want this agency to, you know, to finally treat this issue seriously and regulate antibiotics in the livestock sector.
And just my little shout out on that, I say this a lot on my show, I blog about it, I Facebook about it. Do not think our voices aren't being heard. And if we pump up the volume, things like this can change. There is some progress to me. We have a long way to go. But don't think, oh, what difference can it make if I go to the NRDC's website and have my voice in with the other voices? Critical difference. Everybody has to take that to heart and say, this is something I can easily do something about without having to travel to Washington, D.C. or give a donation, which would be good also. But go to the website, and I say that a lot on my Facebook page. Do just one green thing today. Sign a petition for something you strongly believe in. It takes about 30 to 60 seconds. So I'll be putting that out with the information when we promote the show. It's a great one.
That's right.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so that's right. And in addition to sort of calling on FDA to do their job, I think it's really important that we all do our job as consumers. And, you know, we like to tell people that one of the most powerful things they can do is to flex their consumer muscle, as I like
right.
to call it.
Vote with your feet and how you spend your dollars.
Yeah, so your dollars are precious, and you can have a big voice if you tell, you know, the people from whom you're buying your meat that you want it to be antibiotic free. So one other quick thing that your listeners can do is, you know, NRDC is supporting a campaign right now that's calling on Trader Joe's to actually go 100% antibiotic free in their stores. So
wow.
Whole Foods has already done this,
okay.
Which is great. Any meat you find in Whole Foods, you know that it is antibiotic free, and we think that Trader Joe's can get there too. And what that would mean is that, you know, when you go into a Trader Joe's, you don't have to worry about labels and whatever. You just know
that you're safe.
The meat that you're getting
right.
is antibiotic free. So one other thing your listeners can do is go to www.meatwithoutdrugs.com,
okay,
and just
love
sign
it.
That petition asking Trader Joe's to do that. And you know, you mentioned organic earlier. Organic is a great label to look for. Producers that carry the USDA organic label are not allowed to use antibiotics, so you know that they're not contributing to this problem. There are other labels that your listeners can look for as well. They might see labels that say, you know, no antibiotics administered or no antibiotics used. Those are great ones to look for as well. The only caveat there is that sometimes those can just be claims that the company is making that aren't actually verified by a third party. So what you need to look for is a little shield that says USDA process verified. And
okay.
that means that USDA has actually verified that claim.
USDA process verified?
Yep, that's right. And, you know, speak up. When you go out to your favorite restaurant or you're in that grocery store, tell the manager that you want meat without drugs in it, meat without...
You know, I think a good analogy is people research to a fare-thee-well when they're going to buy a car. How many miles per gallon it gets, what kind of oil changes does it need, what kind of service department does the place have when you're doing it. And to me, the irony there is we eat every day. And
it
you don't have to research that long to find the stores that you can trust, the sources that you can trust. This isn't like a five-day plan. You can spend a couple of hours on the internet and visit some trusted sites and find out and go to the stores armed. And I want to say a little bit about farmers markets. buyer beware when you go to farmers markets also. You have to go and trust the sources for the people that are showing up there. You cannot go to a farmers market and assume that everything is pesticide-free and organic and hormone-free. There again, there could be just a misconception that because you're at a farmers market, well, everything has to be safe. And that is absolutely not true at our farmers market. There are vendors there that go to Mexico and bring a bunch of stuff over. Some of it's clean and some of it isn't, because there are organic farms in Mexico as well. But you have to do the homework, and it's just not that hard. Think about how much more important it is than buying a car, which you're not breathing in. Okay, Sasha, we have to go to a quick break, and I want you to shout out those websites again. And when we come back, I'd love to talk about two things. One is your hope for the future, where you see the American population trending in terms of the global population. And let's talk about, I love this entire concept about the frugal feast. It's just, it intrigues me, and it's something I want to start sharing with people in Mrs. Green's world. So we'll be right back. We're talking just a great conversation with Sasha Lutzi from the National Resources Defense Council. Please stay here with me.
Go deep underwater without getting wet. Study bugs like a real scientist. Make your shadow move in colors. These are just three reasons to visit the exciting hands-on new exhibits at the Children's Museum Tucson, the region's only museum just for kids. For 25 years, we've ignited kids' imaginations at the Children's Museum Tucson. That's something to celebrate. And admission is only $2 on the first Sunday and on the 25th of each month this whole year. Children's Museum Tucson, where imagination and learning connect.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green. Did you know that the 2012 VW Beetle has been completely redesigned, that it has exciting new features, look, and performance, and that it is one of Oprah's best things for 2012? The best news is Chapman VW has them in stock. Check out the new Beetle at Chapman VW at 4600 East 22nd Street between Columbus and Swan, or visit them at TucsonVW.com. Be sure to tell them that Mrs. Green sent you.
At the University of Arizona, we're putting solar know-how to work. And it's not just our researchers. Our students are on the job as well. Our student solar racing team, using recycled solar cells from NASA, designed and built a car from scratch that gets the equivalent of over 3,000 miles per gallon. Talk about students who will go far. Really, really far. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to, and hopefully we'll have you thinking about a lot today. We are so blessed to have on our show today Sasha Lutzi from the National Resources Defense Council. She's a political analyst. We have been talking about antibiotics in animals and the food supply. We're going to talk a little bit about frugal feast. I hope we have time for that, because it's something exciting and something that I think our listeners would love to hear about. Sasha, can we talk a little bit about, we didn't talk about this and it's so obvious to me. What about dairy farms? I mean, there are so many of them, believe it or not, in Arizona. I'm from Jersey, where they had many dairy farms. Milk, it's a staple in people's diet. Cheese, staple in people's diet. What's the situation? Is that part of the issue? Are the antibiotics being administered to dairy cows as well?
So I'm probably not the best person to speak on dairy. I haven't spent as much time looking into the issue. My understanding is that it's less of an issue for dairy cows.
Okay. That's really good to know, because I've had some people on from the Arizona Cattle Growers Association, passionate young people who talk about the changes that have occurred and that continue to occur in the industry to try and get the stigma removed, by substantive changes and having people come in and inspect and seeing things that are better. So there's hope, I will say that on this end. So let's just do a little bit about what the importance of a meatless Monday might be and then go on to Frugal Feast. It's a fun way to end the show.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, it's all about solutions, sort of what people can do. So one thing I think it's important to understand all of this. You often hear pushback on this idea because people assume that taking antibiotics out of the system means much higher costs for meat, much higher prices. And that's just not true. We have a lot of data now from other places in the world where they've eliminated antibiotics and from the American producers that are raising animals without antibiotics that show that it's really not that much more expensive. It's maybe just a few pennies per pound more expensive. And the Consumers Union recently actually did a survey of, I think, the top 13 grocery chains in the United States. They actually went into the stores and they looked around and they saw, you know, how much conventional meat they had, how much antibiotic-free meat they had, and how much it cost one relative to the other. And they found that it's actually really not that much more expensive to buy the antibiotic-free meat. So I think that's sort of the first point I'd like to make. But even if it is a little bit more expensive, just a small reduction in your daily or weekly or monthly meat consumption can actually go a long way. Something like Meatless Mondays, which is basically a commitment to eat vegetarian meals instead of meat just one day a week, using, you know, plant-based protein sources instead of meat.
Right.
That can actually mean, millions fewer animals being raised every year, a lot less cruelty. I know some of your listeners are really concerned about the animal welfare dimension, but from the environmental perspective, you know, that's, you know, less air pollution, less water pollution, less greenhouse gas emissions, and less of these non-therapeutic antibiotics being used. And in terms of the impact that can have on your purse, just reducing your meat consumption a little bit can free up a lot of money so that when you do buy meat, you can buy higher quality meat. So we always say, you know, eat less, but eat better meat. It's better for your health, and you're supporting the farmers that are actually doing things right and providing an alternative to this conventional.
It can help us get to that tipping point, and it's such a small sacrifice. I mean, there are great non-meat choices to eat, and I like your bridging it to then you have more money to spend on good meat. And also, I mean, I get involved in a lot of conversations with people about this, and I say it's like two lattes. Okay, that's what we're talking about. There are people that will not think anything of putting $6 down for a super latte, but they don't want to spend $3 more on meat. And I would like to, slap them in the face because some of them are my girlfriends and just say, hey, come on, do you see what you're saying here? It's about how you're choosing to spend your dollars, and you can spend them more wisely, and everybody wins. It's the green trifecta. Of health and good profits and better for the planet. Okay, Frugal, let's just talk about Frugal Feast a little bit, unless you want to give any more shout-outs about our issue of antibiotics and raising awareness and the calls to action, which I will publicize as well.
Yeah, I mean, the only other shout-outs I would give is maybe just to say that there's a lot of information, and sometimes it's hard to absorb it all at once. This is a really compelling but sometimes complicated issue. But if your listeners go to our website, it's nrdc.org/food. They'll find all of this info there. What's the problem? What are the solutions? And also importantly, when they do go out and buy meat, how they can make sure to prepare it safely once it's in their homes.
And I think that, you know, I have to add another 2 cents. When you talked about MRSA, MRSA has literally been the cause of death for some of my dearest friends. And that's from my heart. They went in to the hospital for breast cancer operation, and they came out with MRSA, and then they went back for MRSA. And so I don't like to put the fear factor out there, but it does bring it up close and personal and home to me and to many of the people that I love, that this is how serious it is. It is life and death. It is increasing, and we can stop it. So it's not a daunting, hopeless concept. Get involved, get engaged, and help us have a healthier planet. To me, I love the upside of it. But one of my dear friends, my very, very dearest friend, she died from hospital-related diseases that she contracted while she was in there. So, and I'm not bashing hospitals at all, but that's the reality of what we're facing as a society.
No, I'm really sorry to hear that, but I'm afraid to say, you know, that's not unusual. Just another little fact from the Centers for Disease Control. They reported that 99,000 people died of hospital-acquired infections in 2002. That's actually the most recent year for which data is available. But that is huge and scary. So this is a very real issue. But as you were saying, it's not a hopeless issue. In the places in the world where they have decided to regulate the use of antibiotics in this sector, things are trending really positively. They're seeing a reduction in these in superbugs and in cases of antibiotic resistant infections. And at the same time, you know, their livestock industries are still thriving. The sky has not fallen on their livestock industries.
And as you pointed out, there's an appropriate use when there is something wrong. That's when you want antibiotics, not to just give them like you take an aspirin every day. Okay, frugal feast, something fun, something possible, something that you can get groups excited about. Let's talk about that.
Sure. So this is actually something that I was inspired to start with some friends and colleagues of mine last fall. We took our inspiration from actually an op-ed column that Mark Bittman wrote in the New York Times, and he was sort of giving a shout-out to the Slow Food Movement's $5 dinner challenge, and he was pushing back on this idea that when you're on a budget, as I am, as so many Americans are these days, that your only option is to eat sort of processed fast food. So he was trying to hold up the idea that, you know, you can actually eat what he calls real food, made from actual fresh ingredients, and that can be as affordable, if not more affordable, than some of these fast food options. And that really struck a chord with me. I just reject this idea that clean, fresh, healthy food is only for some wealthier, otherwise elite segment of the population. I really believe we have to be focused on making it accessible to everyone.
And we have to get that word out there. We have got to, because I passionately agree with you. And people say that to me a lot. Oh, I can't afford to eat that. And so I can question them. But if people are listening, start doing your homework. So go ahead about this.
I'm
a nut
was,
about it.
Yeah, so what we did was we got, you know, a group of our friends together. It's kind of grown since then. We have a couple of dozen people sort of in this group. And once a month, one person will agree to host a dinner at their house. And the goal is to cook that meal for no more than $5 per person.
Oh my gosh.
And we set up some guidelines, you know, where, you know, the meals should try and be seasonal. They should strive to be made from organic ingredients. They should try to be well-balanced. So there's a protein, a whole grain, a dark leafy green. And the night of the meal, everyone comes and they put their $5 in a pot. It's all, you know, BYOB, alcohol
right,
not
right,
included.
Right.
And we all gather and we eat this meal together. On a budget of, you know, normally around $50, we usually have around 10 people in the room. And so nobody kind of believes it going in. But you can sort of see it for yourself. Seeing is believing. I actually post a blog after every dinner with the menu and the recipes. And
great pictures. I've seen some of the great pictures. Okay.
Yeah, great pictures. Yeah. And I try and sort of connect it with the work that we're doing at NRDC around sustainable food. So seeing is really believing. And the vast majority of our hosts to date have actually come in under budget. Which surprised everyone in the room. You kind of see light bulbs going off for everyone. And the thing that, there's two things that make this possible, that kind of unlock this budget. So the first is that when you don't put meat at the center of your plate, you end up freeing up a lot of money to buy all of your other ingredients.
Right, it's the biggest investment for a meal.
And organic. That's right. So most of these meals have been meat-free. The second thing that sort of makes this possible is the community aspect. So when you actually, you know, eat in a group, eat together with your community, and you pool that money, it's sort of the economies of scale, to use a wonky term. But once you get, you know, $50, $60 together, that's actually enough. That's actually, you know, enough of a pot of money to create a really sort of well-balanced, hearty meal where, you know, everyone comes maybe a little bit skeptical, but when they have this experience of eating these gorgeous meals, and you can, you don't have to take my word for it. You can look at the pictures. We've really had some gorgeous, gorgeous meals prepared. And you leave feeling full and happy without meat and for $5. I think that experience has been really impactful, much more so than just telling someone, you know, don't eat this, don't eat that, or buy organic. I think giving them this experience has a greater chance of creating a longer term impact on, you know, their own choices. So
like,
that's sort of at the heart.
I'm popping with this one because we have a wonderful team, the Mrs. Green team, wonderful team members that are on our staff, and we're having a potluck in the beginning of November. So you know what I just thought of? I am so going to get Kelly on this one to say,
yeah,
let's
make the frugal feast.
Do it. Let's do it, and then we'll submit pictures to you, and we'll put it on your blog, because to me, when I get excited about something like this, it does spread in my community, and let's try it. I'm putting it out there on the airwaves, so I can't retract it, and I will be on the phone with Kelly saying, this is what we're going to do, and we'll take pictures, and really make it fun. And I like that it's not the, it does, you know, because I like to I like a little glass of wine with dinner, so that's not included, and you said that, but how fun would this be? I have another dinner group that I'm meeting with in 2 weeks, maybe them not so much, because we always try to see who can get the most bizarre, different, most delicious, you know, it's a fun competition for who's going to bring what, and your meatballs or whatever, but I'm going to talk to them about it, because they're a bunch of really smart, engaged people, and maybe we'll figure that one out. It would be hysterical to try to get that group to do it too. So see, you've infected me already.
Great. I mean, it really is
good fun,
and we have a good time.
It just really does sound like fun. It's that challenge, and it gets people to think outside the box. Now, are one of the guidelines that it is organic and slow food, like locally grown?
Well, you know, there are no nothing's in stone.
It's not like a mandate.
There are no. I mean, we just sort of set out general guidance. We said they should strive to be seasonal and organic and from local farmers. I mean, you got to do the best that you can. It's not about being really pedantic about any of these things, but it's more, like you said, a real conversation starter. You know, once someone has the experience of either hosting one of these dinners or attending one of these dinners, you can just see the light bulbs going off in their head.
And the thing is, it's
so
healthy. It's healthy. It's healthy for your purse or your pocketbook, as we say back in Jersey. And it's healthier for the planet. It's just, there's just not any downside to any of this. And salads, like I have become like a spinach salad nut. That's not expensive to make. you know, and if I could find a little bit of organic bacon, which there does exist, to put in it. I like bacon in my spinach salad, but pine nuts are fine. So you can do salad so much more inexpensively than when you have a big, you know, ribeye on the middle of the plate. Okay, we have like 2 minutes left, which I cannot believe. So I have to do just a little bit of a promo for next week. We have a man named Derek Manns on our show. He's the executive vice president of You Change. It's an organization movement whose sole purpose is to deal with the massive amounts of electronic waste in our community. Another thing that we need to be really paying attention to. Please plan to join us. Wonderful, wonderful interview today with Sasha. I just can't say enough about how excited I am about many, many components of this interview. We are big fans of the NRDC here at Mrs. Green's World. Please remember to follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Pinterest, because that's how you'll stay connected and find out about wonderful guests like Sasha Luzzi, who's a political analyst from the NRDC, and talking about food, what is more important to us as human beings. So get into action, take that one green step, and make it a great green week. Sasha, thank you so much for being a part of this. And one last shout out for the website. It's nrdc.org/food, correct?
Yep, that's right.
Okay, I want to stay connected. Say hi to everybody there from Mrs. Green's World.
Will do. Thanks so much.
Make it a great green week, everybody.